Russia started its war in Ukraine with the goal of seizing the capital, Kyiv. That didn't work. Russia couldn't pull it together militarily. Now the war's main front is in Ukraine's south, in the cities of Zaporizhia and Kherson. Russia wants to annex these areas and is fighting a two-pronged war there. One prong is spooking the international community. Zaporizhia has a nuclear power plant, and someone is shelling it.
The United States continues to closely monitor reports regarding the situation at the Zaporizhia facility, noting considerable concern regarding the risk of a nuclear incident that would endanger the people of Ukraine, neighboring states, and the international community.
Ukraine blames Russia. Russia blames Ukraine. The other prong is subtler, and it crossed our radar a few weeks ago when we learned that Russia is recruiting teachers to go work in southern Ukraine. Why would they be doing that? Coming up on Today Explained.
Support for Today Explained comes from BetterHelp. We'd all like to find an extra hour every day for the things that really matter. Therapy might be able to help you suss out what is most important and prioritize it, and BetterHelp can make the entire process convenient and painless. You can fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist in practically no time at all. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. You can visit betterhelp.com/explain today to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp.com/explained.
Can we think of the Earth itself as a living entity?
Cells are alive. A leaf is alive. A tree is alive. So, is a forest a living thing? Is the whole planet alive?
I think we can think of Earth as a genuine living entity in a meaningful sense and in a scientific sense.
This week on Unexplainable, the Gaia Hypothesis. Follow Unexplainable for new episodes every Wednesday.
It's Today Explained. I'm Noel King. Leila Latipova is a reporter with the Moscow Times. It's an independent English language newspaper. Leila, when did you first notice that Russia was recruiting teachers to go to Ukraine and teach there?
So we started catching wind of that about a month ago. We did see, some reports that teachers or students at specialized institutions that train future teachers in Russia at universities, they have received messages inviting them to go and work in Russia's occupied, or how Russia calls it, in the liberated territories. It's a very kind of hush-hush affair. Most such postings, they are advertised through private channels. So usually in like teachers' chat groups on WhatsApp, for example, or other closed social media groups. There have been some teachers who noted that they have seen official directives from Russia's Ministry of Education that advertise such positions too. There is, of course, like no way to verify that. Journalists have not seen those documents, but it is quite possible given the strategy that Russia is using in the conflict.
Why would Russia be doing this? What's the point of recruiting Russian teachers to go to Ukraine?
That's what colonizers do, right? That's what empires do. And since the very early days of the war, we have seen, Western Ukrainian observers alike saying that it is a colonial war. And it is, So for Russia, of course, it's a way to push their narrative, push that propaganda and establish themselves in the occupied territories.
What was Russia using to induce people to want to go to Ukraine and teach?
Huge salaries by Russian standards. So from what we were able to decode, teachers are usually offered salaries that are about up to 13 times what they might have been paid in Russia. Russia's statistics agency, for example, they put an average teacher's salary at around like $700 a month. But for example, in Dagestan, that's the republic in North Caucasus, it has some of the lowest lowest salaries, and teachers there get paid usually $300 a month. So in Ukraine, for those people who go to the occupied territories, occupation authorities or the Russian government that represents them in this case, they promise a monthly salary of about $4,000. So you can imagine that's completely unimaginable reaches for those teachers. And important note of that is, in fact, from what we know, Dagestan, that I've mentioned, actually provided the highest number of recruited teachers at about 57 to 60 people.
Tell me a little bit more about this propaganda-driven education. How might my classroom learning change if I was a seventh or eighth grade student who got a Russian teacher versus a Ukrainian teacher?
With the secrecy of it all, we don't know exactly, you know, what changes of the curriculum will be implemented. We do know, and what Russian Ministry of Education said before, that they are planning to implement, quote, high quality Russian standards, you know. So what that might mean is, you know, we have an example of Donbass, the Donetsk People's Republic and the Luhansk People's Republic, the two separatist regions where the war initially broke out in 2014.
Pro-Russian protesters took over Donetsk's regional parliament building, declared Donetsk independent, and called a referendum for May the 11th.
So a Ukrainian expert on education policy and memory who I was speaking to, you know, they really believe that it probably will be kind of the same agenda that Russia will be following as they did since 2014 in the so-called Donbass region. In Donbass, they kind of completely removed all mentions of Ukraine and started focusing on local history, kind of, you know, removing this whole idea that they were once part of Ukraine. It started, you know, very heavily reliant on these narratives of belonging to the so-called Russian world. You know, there is this concept of Ruski Mir, that's what Russia calls it, that, you know, there is this big Russian Slavic brotherhood that Russia is protecting.
You went to school in Russia. What were your history classes like?
I went to school in the early 2000s, so for lack of a better word, there was still some freedom in my education, and I know gradually, especially in the past 10 years, Russia started overemphasizing the role of key emperors and empresses like Catherine the Great and Peter the Great.
And in Russia, President Putin is doing some chest pumping over his invasion of Ukraine. On Thursday, he compared himself to Peter the Great, Russian emperor who defeated Sweden in the 18th century.
Just pushing that, you know, strong empire narrative. And then, of course, in Russian curriculum, even when I was at school, there has always been a disproportionate emphasis on Russia's role in World War II, or Russia calls it the Great Patriotic War. And, you know, it's very interesting because, for example, the Molotov-Ribbentrop Pact, you know, and Russia's invasion of Poland and the attack on its eastern neighbors, you know, prior to 1941, was never discussed. So it's a very skewed narrative. But I think the most fascinating, you know, part of Russian schooling that I went through is military education classes. You learn how to load and unload AK-47, how to put on a gas mask, and that's part of your education. And, you know, you have these competitive games in, like, basic military training that all students participate in.
A summer holiday playing war. These Kalashnikov machine guns may not be loaded with real bullets, but at Razvedbat camp, the boys are learning how to handle them. The kids here are aged between 10 and 16.
In fact, since the invasion began, Russian senators kind of started talking that this should be introduced in every single school in the country. For now, it's kind of selective region by region, but Russia is really pushing for it to be a uniform thing.
We've spoken to so many Ukrainians since the war started who say, we are very proud, we are not giving up, we are not going to allow ourselves to be brainwashed. What makes Russia think this is going to work?
The Ukrainian experts I spoke with reminded me that, Russia used that in Ukraine in 39 and 40. And then after the World War II, after the Nazi occupation ended in Western Ukraine, Russia will then, Soviet Union and Russia as its imperial core sent Russian teachers to Western Ukrainian areas for exactly the same purpose as it's doing today. As, an analyst, I do think that Russia is a bit miscalculating with the strategy. It's very difficult to understand why, it's choosing to rely so heavily on propaganda and at the same time forsaking, for example, providing basic services to people, which would seem like an easier, right, way to appease the population. That's what we know from other conflicts and unfortunately, a lot of militant groups, that's how they successfully, appease populations is by first providing basic services. But Russia is really heavily relying on propaganda. Russia is an empire. Within Russia's borders, there are multiple ethnic republics. And Russia did successfully, rewrite histories of those places and has been teaching children in those places kind of very Russia-loving version of what happened to their nation. So Russia does have experience with it, but it took years to do that. I honestly do not see how Ukrainian adults, Ukrainian kids, who lived in an independent, thriving democratic state for years, right now are going to, turn to people who destroyed their homes and, just swallow that propaganda and believe it. I just do not see that happening.
Is it only teachers, Leila, or is Russia trying to import Russians to do other types of jobs in Ukraine?
I have seen particularly bricklayers, roof mechanics, painters, and welders. Alongside teachers, there will be workers coming. So in kind of, the Russian version of Craigslist, which is called Avito, there also have been different postings for to come and partake in what they call the reconstruction of Donbass. So this campaign has been far more, publicized than the teachers' one. Advertisements are out in the open. I, in fact, tried to contact several of those listings. And what interested me in particular is that these advertisements, they promise these big salaries, meals, free transportation, etc. But there is no mention of safety at all. Huh. No mention of what will happen to you, when Ukraine starts counteroffensive. When I would speak to advertisers, they would, hang up on me, stop talking to me when I, the second I've mentioned, oh, what about safety? It's same thing with teachers. And we have seen the Teachers Alliance, that's a Russian watchdog, which is linked to now jailed Kremlin critic Alexei Navalny. They have kind of warned Russian teachers who listen to them that you understand that you might come back, quote, in a body bag, once Ukraine starts overtaking their territory. There is also a campaign to recruit volunteers. And right now, Russia's state channels, they cite that at least 700 people have partaken in volunteer missions in occupied territories. So there are multiple volunteer groups. They're all linked in one way or another to the state and usually the ruling United Russia Party. So from what we've heard, volunteers, they go there, some work with kids. There have been some medic volunteers going to occupied areas. Some, usually young students who go, they say that they hand out humanitarian aid. And some say that they help, with certain policing activities, as they call them. So usually, it's literal screenings of Ukrainian population. And, even on a higher level, Russia has appointed a lot of Russian officials to top positions in occupied territories. They also bring their own. So it's a whole effort at Russification.
Coming up after the break, sending teachers and bricklayers is just Russia's first move to Russify occupied Ukraine.
Support for Today Explained comes from Mint Mobile. Paying your monthly phone bill can be a real source of anxiety, especially if you've been making a bunch of calls to Djibouti. But it doesn't have to be, and Mint Mobile wants to help. They've got plenty of options with plans that range from 3 months to 6 months to a full year. By switching to Mint Mobile, you can get 3 months of premium wireless service for $15 a month. That includes unlimited text and talk, plus high-speed 5G data, and you can keep your same device and number. To get this new customer offer and your new 3 month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, you can go to mintmobile.com/explained. That is mintmobile.com/explained. Once more, you can cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/explained. $45 upfront payment required. That's equivalent to $15 a month, obviously. New customers on a first 3 month plan only. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes on the unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
Support for today's episode comes from Constant Contact. Constant Contact believes the attention economy is real, and Constant Contact wants you to excel in the attention economy. If you're a business owner, a marketer, or anyone else just trying to break through the noise and reach customers, Constant Contact might be able to help. According to Constant Contact, their platform makes it easy to use email and SMS marketing to keep your message in front of your customers, reach new audiences, and communicate more effectively. They even offer a handful of writing assistance tools and automation features to help you get more from your marketing efforts. You can get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. You can go to ConstantContact.com for a free trial. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com. Today Explained, we're back with Pyotr Sauer. He's Russia Affairs correspondent for The Guardian. Pyotr, beyond importing bricklayers and teachers and politicians into occupied Ukraine, how is the Kremlin trying to Russify these areas?
Russia has started to hand out Russian passports, for example, in occupied areas. And I've been talking to people in Kherson and Zaporizhia who tell me that without a Russian passport, you can't start a business or you can't get certain benefits. So they're really putting pressure on locals, giving them no choice really but to take a Russian passport. We've seen billboards all around those areas. Massive billboards which say, you know, we are Russia, this will always be Russia, we'll never leave you. So a real sort of intense propaganda machine is going on. The currency has been changed, the ruble has been introduced, Russian products are now sold in stores, all Ukrainian products are gone. So I think if you're living there, they're really trying to make it feel like you're living in Russia and not in your motherland in Ukraine.
And notably, none of these things that you just told us about involve killing people. Many people have died during this invasion, but these are non-lethal tactics. What is Russia trying to do by using tactics that don't kill people, but instead try to force them to be Russian?
Well, Russia is really laying the grounds for an annexation, for a referendum, for a vote that is expected to happen sometime in September, probably. They need some sort of voter turnout, so they're really trying to create conditions for a referendum.
And what do you imagine the question of that referendum will be? When it's put to voters, they'll be asked what?
Probably something, a very sort of simple, do you want to be part of Russia or not?
Wow.
But I think we have to be hugely skeptical of this referendum and how it will go. From every point of international law, this is completely illegal, of course. And any election in Russia, we have to be very skeptical about. Also, domestic elections, presidential elections. We've seen how Russia is good at managing elections and faking them.
There's a spokesman at the White House, John Kirby, and he made this statement that we noticed. He said Russia's following an annexation playbook, suggesting that Russia has done this before. Where recently?
Well, 8 years ago, Russia did this, of course, in Crimea. Some of the things we see are very similar. The first step for Russia after the troops entered was to appoint local officials that were willing to switch sides, which we've seen in these occupied areas happening as well. You know, Ukraine considers some traitors for that. Then we've seen that Russia was very quick to shut down all access to Ukrainian and Western information.
It's hard to tell because I'm from Donetsk. There are only Russian programs on the television there. Now I came to see my son in Kyiv, and there are only Ukrainian programs. How can I compare them? How can I say who to believe?
You can't get access to Ukrainian television anymore. Zaporozhye has banned Google, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Similar things happened in Kherson. So they're making sure that the people that have stayed can only get access to Russian information. In Mariupol, the city that was destroyed, we've even seen these bizarre images of big vans with TV screens driving around the destroyed city.
What they're doing is cutting off Ukrainians from Ukrainian news, Western news, and European websites while bombarding them with Russian state media.
So, you know, I think for Russia, it's very important to cut off the Ukrainians there of any independent information. And then what we've seen also is the handout of passports, similar to Crimea.
So if I want to come back here, I'm going to need a Russian visa.
Yes, you should do it. Crimea is not Ukraine. Crimea will be Russia Federation.
As part of the playbook also is Russia's use of resources in these areas that they've already been doing. They've been shipping tons and tons of grain out of Kherson and Zaporozhye to Turkey and to Syria. Sort of appropriating these lands as if they're already Russian. And the final really step is they've set up election committees, which are supposed to organize these referendums.
Why would Russia want to rush and hold a referendum? Why not spend more time trying to bring people around?
Well, so Ukraine has been actually quite open about the fact that they really want to win back the South.
Ukraine's strongest statements have indicated that it wants to take back everything that Russia has occupied.
We need to remember that Kherson and Zaporizhia are two strategic areas for Ukraine. They have access to the Black Sea. They're also the breadbasket of Ukraine, and people say the breadbasket of the world. Huge agricultural area. So without them, Ukraine will have a very hard time to be an economically striving, independent country. So for Ukraine, it was always a priority to win back these areas. And with all the Western weapons they've been receiving, most notably the HIMARS, Ukrainian officials are, you know, becoming more confident, and they've been more vocal about launching an operation into southern Ukraine, into occupied Ukraine. And we're seeing the first steps of this. For example, the attack on the Crimean airbase.
This morning, a brazen attack on a Russian airbase in Crimea. These verified videos circulating online shows two massive explosions. And beachgoers running for cover as a cloud of smoke pours into the sky in the distance.
So you have these territories. They are occupied. They haven't yet had the referendum. Tell me what the resistance to that looks like.
It's tough to get real accurate information out of Kherson and Zaporizhia. It's important to say that because people are scared to talk to journalists. Journalists themselves, Western journalists, can't travel there. So we're hearing bits and pieces, and I've been talking to people from there. We know there is a resistance movement going on. For obvious reasons, those people don't want to identify themselves. But we've seen attacks on pro-Russian officials, car bombings of pro-Russian officials. Pro-Russian officials have gotten so scared that when they're shown on Russian national television, their faces are blurred out. And the faces of their family members are blurred out because Russia knows that they're sort of targets for Ukraine. So there is a resistance. There's also a lot of small acts of resistance. Teachers that don't want to teach in the Russian curriculum and are quitting. A lot of Ukrainians simply have left those cities. A lot of men have left those cities. A lot of people who have stayed behind are older people who can't leave. So that's one of the reasons why the economy is not really going anywhere, because there's just a huge brain drain.
How How is the Ukrainian government in Kyiv talking about this attempt at Russification? If a seventh grade teacher from Russia or a bricklayer from Russia shows up in occupied territory, are they treated as an enemy if the Ukrainians catch them? How is it working?
We haven't had a precedent, but obviously if those teachers come to those areas and teach in their schools, they will be considered enemies. The more complicated question is what to do with Ukrainians living there and working there. You know, do you punish a Ukrainian teacher who has the choice either to teach or have no income? At the moment, Ukrainian officials have said that if Ukrainian teachers will teach the Russian curriculum, they will be considered traitors.
Oh, wow.
But at the same time, they're relaxing some of the rules before basically anyone who continued to work in those areas could fall under treason law. Now they've eased that up a little bit, and now they only consider treason those who specifically work with the Russian government. So they're relaxing the laws a bit because they realize that people also have to survive and you know, eat something and have some income.
And if Ukraine doesn't manage to win back those lands, if Russia does successfully annex them, what are the implications of that? What is the significance of that?
Well, I think Russia will further become a pariah state. There will really be a no return back from sanctions. That will mean that Russia annexed the biggest territory of land since the Second World War through force. The West will not be able to negotiate a relief of sanctions, for example, as long as Russia occupies these lands. You know, these are millions of people under Russian occupation. So it will be like Crimea, but, you know, tenfold, and push Russia further away from any peace negotiations. And Zelensky has said himself, the Ukrainian president, that if Russia does this, you know, there will be no peace talks at all. The stakes are very high.
Today's show was produced by Halima Shah and edited by Matthew Collette. It was fact-checked by Tori Dominguez and Laura Bullard, and it was engineered by Paul Mounsey. I'm Noel King. It's Today Explained.